Blog Talk Radio. This is Love's Outer Limits, and I'm your host, Dr. Amy Marsh, sexologist, hypnotist, lots of other kinds of things, and I'm with my co-host, M. Christian, otherwise known as Chris, erotica writer, sexuality writer, sexual futurist, and also lots of all kinds of other things. We've got a great show lined up for you today, so welcome.
Oh my God, Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
I am in the state of hypersaturation. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Not hypersaturated?
No, kind of moderate today, but, you know, it still looks like there's a lot going on.
Oh, God, is there? Oh, my God. Anyway, if I'm a little hoarse today, pardon me, listeners, pardon me, lovely co-host. I seem to be having some reactions to the pollen that's in the air right now. So I may even lose my voice at some point, but I hope not. Let's start with our usual shout outs. Do you want to begin?
Certainly, certainly. I want to give out a shout out to the usual suspects, the wonderful folks at Kinkly. Of course, Tickle.life, you know, who have been so wonderful with both posting and encouraging articles by your sweet self as well as myself. I definitely highly recommend them. Futureofsex.net, of course, is one of my all-time favorite places to write for, and they're always doing some great stuff, especially now about the current epidemic. I also want to give a quick call out to the folks at Sexpert.com. I've written one article for them now, and I'm writing another one. And they're actually going to do a contest starting tomorrow, giving away a free copy of my audio book of my science fiction erotic collection hard drive. So if you go to my Twitter feed at mchristianzobob, you can get the details probably starting tomorrow.
Oh, that is so cool. Well, congratulations. That sounds great. And we'll be cheering on the lucky winner, whoever that is. That's really great news. Nice. Let's see, as for me, I know we've got it in the show notes, but I do want to mention on the air that the music we're using is called Waltz of Treachery, and it's a, what's the word? It's a... non-royalty piece of music that Kevin MacLeod has offered up on the internet at his website, Incompetent. And I always enjoy browsing the offerings that he has for all different kinds of things, royalty-free music. Let's see. And the other thing, two things I want to mention. I'm going to be writing a follow-up to this particular episode, and it's going to be published on my ladyofthelake.blog because I realize there's a lot of content, dense, rich information with a lot of links that I want to make sure that I make available to our listeners, and it's too much to go into our show notes. So look for something called Sex and Magic on ladyofthelake.blog, and you'll find it there. And the other thing I want to bring up is I just wrote a column on my sexologist website on the blog there called Pandemic Pleasures. And there's a grid, among other things, of all sorts of ideas for different sexy things you can do during this time of social isolation. So people might enjoy browsing through that. So I think that's it for me. gosh. I spent all day, as you know, online attending a sexuality conference, and there were 12 different workshops, and they were all great. The speakers were amazing, most of them very well known in the field, but I feel like my brain is about to explode. I'm still processing information and things I learned, and now preparing some notes for this show. It's almost more than I can stand. So sex and magic, right?
Right, exactly.
Like, where do we want to go with that first? There's so many places to start. You got any ideas?
Well, it's funny. It's like we were talking about this the other day, and, there's like so many different divisions of sex, spiritualism, magic practices, and integrating that with sexuality. It's like, it's kind of like you just said, kind of a hard place to start, because it's like you've got like, you know, more traditions like Tantra, and then you've got like newer traditions like Church of All World and like the Black Leather with Fairies. But I think it's really interesting how it's like, you know, sex has sort of like evolved over the centuries to become in certain areas and certain belief systems, you know, part of like the spiritual practice.
I have the feeling that what we now call sex magic has probably been around for eons. I mean, really, when you think about it, what's the most magical things that an early human being could have experienced or encountered in their life? And birth, I mean, think about that. Another human being coming out of a bigger human being, that's pretty outrageous. And orgasm. And orgasm, we know, can be a transcendent experience. And it wouldn't surprise me that to learn that sex magic of some kind has been a feature of magic and religious and spiritual traditions, throughout time and all over the world. And that is pretty much the case. There's something about that energy that, I don't know, puts us in touch with something a lot bigger than we are. And some people have become very adept at harnessing those energies and then directing them with their will towards, you know, a certain end or to influence something in a certain way. Maybe we should start with the beginning of what magic is. And
that's an
because,
excellent
idea. Yeah. And I was, and then we can bring the sex into it. So one of my favorite authors on all things magical is a guy named Aidan Wachter. And his book, Six Ways, Approaches and Entries for Practical Magic, I just love it for so many reasons. And I'm going to read a little passage from his book in chapter one. So he says, magic and sorcery are ways of being in the world. They are ways of interacting and interbeing with the world itself and its visible and invisible structures and inhabitants, which altogether I refer to as the field. The aim of magic as I know it is to increase the quantity and quality of usable and useful information, communication, options, and avenues of change and movement within ourselves and our worlds. It is an art of total responsibility, careful attention, and reciprocity. Lately, I've been defining magic as the art of falling in love with the field and its inhabitants. So, you know, that's something I really like. It expands on that, you know, thing that you read, I don't know, to paraphrase Aleister Crowley about, you know, magic being the operation of the will and all of that. I'm not dissing that, but I just happen to like Adam Wachter's definition because it's very inclusive and open-ended. And this idea of being in collaboration with powers, spirits, including the power of self and the power of sex, and interacting with larger beings or energies or what have you in order to influence something or gain, you know, information or communication. Yeah, that works for me. Do you have something that has served you well when you've thought about magic?
It's interesting. It's like I agree completely with that passage, and I agree with that philosophy very much so. It really kind of depends, because it's like in some situations, magic can be considered a tool for introspection. In other words, kind of like a personal therapeutic approach. Other times, it can be directly affecting or trying to directly affect the world around us or changing probabilities. One definition, and I really wish I could remember who said this, it's based that the idea of magic isn't necessarily to, like, you know, make chocolate pudding appear, but rather to sort of, like, tweak the odds in the universe in your favor, or, you know, to sort of, like, you know, kind of like, not necessarily bend, but just sort of, like, you know, just kind of shift things a little bit, as opposed to, like, a real direct physical reaction. But it really depends on your definition, because it is very, very kind of a personal thing, though, of course, there are, you know, like various, you know, fields and, you know, various spiritualities that, you know, approach this differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you're very right when you say we can't just expect to do a spell and cause, did you say a pudding to appear on the table in front of us? That's probably beyond most people's capacities, I would imagine, contrary to what you see in the movies and on TV. But you can influence the things that are within your sphere of influence and the law of physics, which might be a little more porous than we think, but, you know, I mean, this is how part of how we perceive the world. And certainly it can be a tool for self-development, introspection, grounding, centering, learning how to protect yourself. There's a lot. There's getting in touch with spirits of the land or ancestors or deities or other kinds of magical spiritual beings. This is all part of the big tent, I would say, of what's called magic, sorcery, witchcraft, you know, call it what you like. You and I have both had, if you want me to out you here, you know, some interactions with different participants and groups in Northern California. Is that fair to say?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Oh, believe me, I'm pretty out, so there's nothing you can do that was, you know, so no worries about that. But, yeah, it's like when I was back in, like I said, you know, I moved from L.A. area to San Francisco in 88 and just sort of really jumped into all kinds of various, you know, I'm not sure what to call it, alternative, you know, subcultures. Neither one of those sound right, but anyway, you know, everything from you know, once again, the BDSM community to also the burgeoning kind of pagan, you know, kind of community. I went to Ancient Ways many times. I was part of a coven, so it was like we did a lot of experimentation. And at that time, you know, the magic practices were much more along the lines of like what's now evolved into the Church of All Worlds. But back then it was following the teachings of like Starhawk and things like that, which is pretty innocuous. It was, you know, while some sex was involved, mostly it was kind of on a very casual level, the same way with a lot of spells were just very simple things. You know, kind of an excuse to sort of get together and be social. So it was still a lot of fun. I think there's a lot of things that happened during that period that were actually pretty enlightening and rather pleasant. And it kind of like cemented my idea of my personal approach to like spirituality is, again, it's kind of a tool for self-exploration and kind of like, you know, understanding and coming to grips with the universe. But yeah, it was actually a very interesting time. I've often thought about getting back into that, but, you know, things move on. I've never been one to really look back, but it was still very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot going on. Church of All Worlds. And I want to make the point too, that Starhawk's work is, I don't know what the right word would be, has engendered or helped created the reclaiming school of witchcraft and magic. So that community, reclaiming, really grows out of Starhawk's work and people like her. And the Church of All Worlds. Of course, they were major players back in San Francisco. There are so many different magic traditions: Gardnerian Wicca, Thelema, and Druids. We've got Norse heathens looking into Seder magic. We've got pretty much, you name it, it's out there. You can find it. I have been out for a while as an eccentric solo practitioner of what I like to call witchery. And my practice is largely devotional in that I pretty much daily make acknowledgement of various beings that I consider are in my field, to use Adam Wachter's term, and then to interact with them if there's something I need in the way of some influences or some blessings or whatever. And I enjoy it. And for me as a sexologist, also having the opportunity to look at magical traditions through a sexological lens is really fascinating. It's good fun. And I'm probably at this time more in love with the idea of writing something much larger about kind of the intersections of sexology, which is the study of human sexuality, and different magic traditions, but not doing it so much in academic language. I would write something that would be scholarly, but I really detest academic language for the most part. So something maybe more accessible to people like me who like words and the way that they're used, so that's a fantasy of mine. Will I do it? I don't know.
Well, that'd be wonderful. I definitely think you should do that. Absolutely. I think we need more, writing on this subject because it can be such a very powerful tool. And I like the way of reclaiming it and exploring different options as opposed to institutional, kind of approaches to a lot of spirituality.
Right. Yeah. Well, for me, not getting too involved with any set structure is ideal. I don't seem to operate well in anything that's too hierarchical or too formal. It's just not me. And one of the perils, I'm just going to bring this up, one of the perils of those kinds of structures, as great as they can be for people, for learning, for developing their magical skills and the capacity to work together with other people to raise energy and direct it, when we talk about sex and magic, I hate to say it, but one of the things we really have to hit on are the predators and the predatory incidents that have really damaged the experience of neo-paganism and witchery and sorcery for so many people, maybe mostly women and women-identified people, but not entirely. And so I'd say since the 60s, and probably beforehand as well, there's been a lot of pressure put on certain people to engage in sex acts, either as rites of initiation, like the Great Rite, or as a way to work yourself up the ladder, and become a priest or a priestess. Very binary language there, folks, sorry, but that's kind of how it was back then and how it still is in some places. And people who have dared to talk about, from a personal standpoint in particular, who've dared to bring up the incidents of abuse that they experienced in the neo-pagan communities have been viciously trolled. An example is Sarah Ann Lawless, a very admirable person who wrote 3 articles and then was so harassed, sexually harassed and otherwise harassed, that she ended up taking her blog down, which is a real pity because much as, there's still this force inside these different structures that wants people to be quiet about the things that are flawed. And you know, that's unfortunate.
Oh, very much so. That's very upsetting, and that is something that people need to be extremely aware of, especially when you're dealing with things that are connected to a larger group or organization or are particularly hierarchical. So if you have, like, anybody who claims to be more enlightened or more in guidance, that's, you know, for me, I'm overly cautious, but that's always been a big warning bell to me, because I've always kind of viewed spirituality and magic as being a very individual thing. And, you know, while certain people can be mentors and certain people can be guides, certain people can help, you know, no one really is above anybody else, and especially in a situation where they're demanding things like, you know, blind obedience, or, to achieve this certain level of enlightenment and magic practices, you have to send in as many box tops. It's just, you know, but yeah, being careful emotionally and sexually is extremely important. So you need to have, like, safeguards, and don't hesitate to leave or reach out or get out. Magic is hopefully a benevolent force, and it really is very disturbing that people want to make it into a benevolent, exploitive, you know, technique to hurt people. It just, you know, rankles me.
Right. In a way, it's like the various, and I'm being very general here, because obviously some groups of people are going to be much more progressive and supportive of sexual human rights than others. But by and large, it seems as if the neo-pagan and magic communities are somewhat behind certain sexual communities, like the BDSM community, mm-hmm. and communities where consent culture is really paid attention to, and things like that. I still find sort of this, you know, I read different bloggers, right, and like to check in on what's happening in this realm of magic and the realm of where magic and sex interact. And as a sexologist, I can sit back and say, folks, what's the problem? The World Health Organization created these great definitions of sexual health and sexual human rights. Just put that at the center of your policies when it comes to, you know, how your members are treating each other, because that's already been created for you. And then let the magic stuff happen, knowing that at the center you have guidelines that have already been in place and are recognized internationally. I mean, how hard is that? But it's like anything else. A lot of communities are insulated. They're not keeping track of what other kinds of communities are mm-hmm. doing. And not too many people think, oh, sex magic, let's see what the World Health Organization might have to say about how to do sex magic in an ethical way. That doesn't really happen. Mm-hmm. And that's part of why I'm going to write this article on my blog over the next couple of days. I'll have something up on that, because I want to launch that as an idea, you know, that we don't have to reinvent the wheel in that area.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
absolutely.
So, I'm sorry, I'm sort of pausing here. And again, I'm so saturated with information, I'm having a hard time reaching into what I'm trying to pull out here. But getting back, so we talked about magic. So let's talk a little bit about how we define sex magic. You know, like, what does that mean to you, that term, and what does it mean to me, and what might it mean to, you know, just the average person listening in?
Well, in my case, I would say that, you know, sex magic, me, it's like, it's funny because I describe myself as a political atheist. In other words, that, you know, when it comes down to legislation, I vote against absolute separation of church and state. It's like, I believe science should always override religion, and, you know, it's the way we understand the universe. Socially, I'm more of an agnostic. In other words, I acknowledge and I practice various kind of, like, you know, magical traditions, pagan kind of things as a social thing. But when it comes down to it, in my heart, I'm much more spiritual, because it's like two times I noticed that in my experience, and I kind of feel the presence of something more, and that's one is when I'm writing. because I often will like lose track of my consciousness and just kind of disappear into a story. And the other time is during sex. So for me, the two are kind of intertwined. So personally, I kind of view sex magic as just being like a way of manifesting positive, you know, kind of creative energy. I'm fortunate that I didn't grow up in a situation where I felt a lot of guilt or shame around sex. So for me, it's kind of like one of these situations where I can, you know, sort of like use it, you know, as a personal way of sort of like, you know, kind of like focus on positive things, you know, while, you know, engaging in sexual activities, or using it as a manifestation, you know, where I'm just doing sexual fantasizing or such.
Yeah, and it's obviously working for you because you are a very prolific writer and have been for a long time. So, hey, yeah, using sexual energy to get the creative juices flowing, that seems like a fabulous use of, what we might call sex magic. Now, some people might think sex magic is magic that you do because you want to attract a partner and get laid. And that's not what sex magic is. Now, love magic is something that, you know, you try to attract a partner. But sex magic is the tool and the ritual of using sexual energy and sometimes sexual fluids, you know, which could be menstrual blood, semen, and so forth, to help power and fuel the ritual that you're doing, to add on to a spell that you're making. And you could be using sigils, you could be using written petitions, you could be using all kinds of objects and magical implements, and, you know, however you do it, it's fine. But to get the juices up, to get yourself into a state where you're really pulling the energy into your body and directing it into the spirit world, sex is a great way to do that. But, and Tantra and Taoist sexual traditions are definitely ancient ways of harnessing and using those energies for transcendence, as well as, you know, more practical uses, you know, as in spell work. But interestingly enough, probably most sex magic is solo sex. So you can be raising all that energy yourself. You don't need a partner to do it, which I think is cool, especially in this time of social isolation. We could all be, you know, turning ourselves into sex magicians right now if we wanted to. And hey, we might want to bring that into the next few months. You know, it could be transformative. What the heck? Do you want to add anything there before I go on? Because I probably have a little bit more to say about that. Sure, go ahead.
Well, I mean, another side of it that I think it's worth mentioning as well is that, you know, sex doesn't necessarily have to be genital contact. It can be other forms like BDSM. And similar. I mean, back in the heyday, again, it's like, you know, when dinosaurs ruled the earth, and I was in San Francisco, another group I belonged to and would hang out with fairly often would be the Black Leatherwing Fairies, which was a division of the Radical Fairies, which was a queer-focused GLBTA organization, not really organization, I should say, because it wasn't, like, structured that way. But, you know, the Radical Fairies was, like, all about sex magic. It was about, you know, using, you know, queer energy to, you know, work magic and such. And the Black Leatherwing was sort of like a subset, which was, you know, practicing more BDSM focused. So I would often go to some of their events or retreats, and they would be doing things like, you know, the Okipah, there was one of the Sundance, and of course, you know, Mustafar was very, you know, a very big figure in that. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be genital sexuality or even orgasm. It can involve BDSM practices. So I do have to say that if you are practicing this solo, be very careful and learn as much as you can, because there are risks to doing BDSM practices solo. So it's one of those things you might be interested, but I would always put a huge amount of caution in there to, once again, learn from somebody who knows exactly what they're doing, and always play safe, because there are very big risks.
Yeah, thank you so much for adding that, and also adding the, you know, the example of BDSM as another way, obviously, to raise sexual energy. And because you're an experienced BDSM educator, you know, you, I know that you always transmit those messages about how to play safe and know what you're doing and learn how to do stuff before trying it. On the other hand, if you want to do sex magic, bringing yourself to orgasm is a terrific way to do your spell work. And it's simple and generally not harmful, you know, like play safe though. yeah, like that. But a very simple way to do that is to write a petition, say, of what you want, you know, very simple present focus sentence. Let's say, oh, I don't know. I can't even think of a good example right now. But, you know, let's say you want to draw some circumstance towards you and to have it resolve in your favor. So just write that down on the petition. You know, if you want to light a candle in a safe place, don't leave it where your cat can knock it over or where it, you know, might tip over. You know, again, magic, safe, sane, risk aware magic. You know, do whatever rituals you need to do, and then have your desire firmly in your mind. And as you begin to pleasure yourself and bring yourself to orgasm, have that focus in your mind, either a symbol of the success that you want from the spell work, the sigil, if you've created a sigil that stands for that, however you're doing it, you know, you get to set up how you do it. But charging the bell with that moment of orgasm is just a really simple and easy way to do it. So, yeah, let's see. What else? What else do we want to say about this? There's
well, it's funny that there's so many divisions of sex magic. I mean, you have, like, you know, ancient practices like the Kama Sutra and Tantra, and then you have more modern interpretations as well. I think it's really fascinating that there's, like, you know, so many divisions of these. And it even could be argued that, you know, certain, like, self-flagellation is in some ways kind of a form, you know, though to be honest, it's not really done for pleasure, but it is kind of like a sensual thing on certain levels. But I think it's fascinating. It's like it's really open to, like, personal exploration. There's so many things you can do to it, but what you just outlined there was, I think, a wonderful, you know, encapsulation of how to do it solo. I think that's really in a very effective way, and that kind of follows the tradition that I've always kind of followed as well.
Yeah. Jason Miller is a guy, I'm going to talk about a couple of other books here. Jason Miller, also well-known writer and teacher of what he likes to call sorcery, wrote a book called Sex, Sorcery, and Spirit, which is very, very good. And it's all about sex magic. And I also want to mention that Outside the Charm Circle, Exploring Gender and Sexuality in Magical Practice by Misha Magdalene, also has a chapter on sex magic. And I love Outside the Charm Circle because, you know, it's just that necessary book, that necessary voice that takes us away from the gender binary that you find so often in so many different magical practices. And I just came across a great quote today by a writer at thelemicunion.com, somebody named Sister Georgia. I don't know anything about her, but she had a quote that said, the fundamental polarity for some people is not male, female, but human divine. And I just really, really liked that. She wrote a piece called Seo Sexuality, Sex and Magic in 2018, which is, I think, where I found the quote. And I love that the fundamental polarity is not gendered the way we think of it so often, but human divine. And that brings us also to some of the things that Jason Miller talked about in his book about, well, you can have solo sex, you can have partnered human-to-human sex for sex magic, and you can have sex with spirits, deities, demons, what have you. as another way to do your sex magic. So let's go there for a few minutes.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really a fascinating subject. It's like, you know, I really like the idea of opening yourself up to the cosmos and, you know, entities and forces, you know, to add that to your sex magic practice. I think that's really very exciting.
Well, it is exciting, but, you know, you don't just, you know, open yourself up willy-nilly. There's a huge need, you know, so one way to play safely with sex magic is you ground and center and protect yourself. If you're going to create an arrangement with a spirit or a deity or a demon or what have you, I believe it's best to cultivate a relationship with that being first. You create the boundaries. You negotiate those boundaries with that non-human, unseen being before you actually engage in sex magic with them. So if you just open yourself up wide and say, yeah, I'm calling in a spirit lover, you don't know what you're going to get. You might get someone that's benign and you might not. And so, folks, if you're going to try this at home, get your basic information down first before you, you know, light your candle, make your sigil and lay down on the bed to self-pleasure. Do that essential work first. And I should have said this at the beginning. Ground, center, protect yourself. And if you're going to involve a spirit of any kind, I say the safest thing is to have a relationship of some kind, you know, a dedication, an offering, something where that you've worked out your boundaries with that spirit before you begin to bring somebody like that into your practice. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think it makes perfect sense, and you're completely right. This is, you have to have, you know, practice conscientious and, you know, being aware of the risks involved with anything. I think it's even more so when you're dabbling or investigating this kind of thing, because you're completely right. You can invite all kinds of negative forces by accident. So, you know, making sure you're centered, making sure you're grounded, you know, making sure you have connections to people who are supportive and understanding, and, you know, cleaning your space and yourself in a spiritual way, you know, and making, you know, purifying the environment. And like you said, doing the research and not just reaching out willy-nilly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I heard a ridiculous and sad and terrible story sometime last year. A friend of mine was in contact with a young person who said, hey, I'm going to summon a demon, have sex with the demon, and do a blood oath with the demon just from instructions on the internet. And this was appalling, and the results were not that great, you know. So people don't just take something off the internet the first thing you see. You know, there's some good information out there, but just as with sex, there's also a lot of bad stuff too, or stuff that just isn't accurate. Same with the, you know, coronavirus, just to bring that in for a moment. There's some great information out there, but you have to go to the good sources to get it. And there's a lot of other ridiculous stuff that just makes no sense whatsoever and could get you killed or somebody else killed that comes in contact with you if you're infected. But getting back for a minute, so this idea of having a sexually energetic encounter with the spirit, I know that sounds weird, but people have been doing this, again, throughout history and through many, many, many cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the more authentic tantric practices, kind of not what you get here in the United States with neo-tantra, which is all westernized and all of that, was to imagine yourself as a deity in union with another deity. And in that practice, you would experience the transcendent energies. And this wasn't necessarily to create magic, but to fuel transcendence. And so it's a legitimate spiritual path. I mean, Christianity is based on spectrosexuality. You know, you've got Mary and you've got the Holy Ghost. That's a spectrosexual encounter right there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
as well as a lot of Greek and Roman mythology. It's very prevalent.
Yep. Yep. It really is. In fact, I did a survey, I guess it was last year, of people who already identified themselves as having had some kind of sexual experience with a spirit. And these were people drawn pretty much from pagan community. And I just wanted to know more about how they, what happened, how they achieved that. Was it something that was spontaneous, or did they do a ritual to make that happen? Were these like hookups, or were they, are they part of an ongoing relationship with a spirit or a deity? You know, like what's actually going on here? So there's some fascinating results. And that's actually up on my Lady of the Lake blog. There's a page devoted to the results of the spectrosexuality survey and some of the reasons why I did it. You know, as a sexologist, I'm interested in all that stuff, right? Wasn't a scientific survey, so there wasn't random sampling. And I believe that the benefit of this survey was not numerical. It was in the open-ended responses, the things that people are actually writing down and telling me. That was where the, I think, the value and the interest of this was. So again, not a scientific survey, but interesting. And it helped me, you know, deal with some of my curiosity about this. Let's see. What else? What haven't we touched on yet?
Well, I do think it's interesting that, like you mentioned before, the spectrosexuality is so prevalent. It's part of many, many cultures and many, many, you know, spirituality practices, as well as things like, you know, mythology and such. So it's more common than not. But I do think it's really fascinating. And the only thing I could sort of add to this is I do think it's like kind of reinforcing that, you know, while there are disciplines and there are people who've written on the subject, you know, I do think it's important to approach this with a very, you know, structured and, you know, and for lack of a better word, grounded mind about this, and just not leap into something that you, like you mentioned before, very excellently, just something you read on the internet, because there's a lot of just garbage out there that could lead to potential harm. So, you know, do your research, get yourself grounded. And remember that it's very much a personal thing. I mean, once again, talking back to what you harped on before, is like it is a very personal thing. And be wary of someone who claims, you know, outlandish, you know, achievements, you know, through this. The same kind of way that you don't want to be connected to, like, some of these, you know, prosperity pastors who, you know, claim Jesus wants you to have a BMW. I mean, it's just like, you know, there's all kinds of really kind of like very harmful things out there. But if you do approach it with your, for lack of a better word, head screwed on straight, you know, there's mm-hmm. a lot of good information and some very positive things that can be achieved.
Right. Discernment is huge. Discernment is something that people really have to focus on, because, you know, you could be in actual contact with a being, for example, or you could be just hearing some voices in your head that are telling you what you want to know. And mm-hmm. you really have to, you know, as you say, be cautious, check yourself, have your head screwed on straight, and understand that there's tremendous, you know, really wonderful potential in moving through the world. You know, there's a lot of animism. Animism is underneath a lot of this, in that, you know, spirits are people too, you know, just as animals and trees and mountains are people too, and mm-hmm. microscopic entities like the COVID, that's COVID-19 virus, you know, that's a people too, if you want to get down to it. And but you, when you have this way of interacting with what's around you, you know, the beings of the field, again, as Aidan Wachter says, you know, it can be amazing. You can have your ancestors with you. You can have spirits that are helpful, that are guides. You can create thought form servitors that will help you with different things. And you have to treat them nice. You know, you have to realize it's a relationship. So, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, while it's possible to call up a demon lover and have, you know, hot demon sex, you know, again, you might want to be a little careful. and maybe create that relationship first, because I'm going to tell you guys, this shit is real. I'm just saying. I've had my interactions oathed to a particular deity. Part of my practice with that deity is a tantric type practice of working towards union, resonance, being in connection with the template of that particular deity. And there are ups and downs in sort of how strong that connection is from time to time. And that's interesting that these things fluctuate. Just as a human relationship can fluctuate sometimes. You know, sometimes your attention's elsewhere. You don't have the energy. Maybe you're bored. You know, different things happen. Maybe you haven't left the right amount of donuts on the altar. You know, there could be a lot going on. And yet at the same time, you have to, again, use your discernment. There's a phrase called unverified personal gnosis, UPG. There's also a phrase of community verified gnosis. So if you happen to know other people who might be working with some of the same deities or spirits you are, it is good to check in and say, hey, you know, I felt this thing happening. You know, get some divination on it, or get some advice or some insights or thoughts from other people who might have experienced something similar to you. You know, that is, it's intuitive. It's not scientific, though in some ways these things can be verified, but they're verified through mostly subjective experience. And on the other hand, sometimes some objective things happen. I've got a mechanical, you know, battery-operated candle on one altar. And the battery was only supposed to be good for 10 hours. This candle has stayed lit for the most part. Sometimes it flickers off and I give it a little shake and it comes on again. It's been on for 8 months. Pretty much 24/7 on just one battery. And it's on the altar of a particular deity who is known for basically a fire deity. And there's got to be some electric stuff going on too. Now, this battery is like Thomas Pynchon's Byron the Bulb in Gravity's Rainbow. This battery and this candle on this altar is still going strong. This defies what was on the packaging. So I'm just saying, sometimes these things happen, and can I explain it? Not really. Unless I've got garden gnomes coming in from outside and switching the batteries, you know, while I'm asleep. But I don't think that's very likely. So really interesting things can happen that seem to be beyond, you know, ordinary, rational, waking ways of viewing the world. I mean, you know this. I know you collect some of these stories too.
Well, absolutely. In fact, it's like if you get a couple of drinks in me, I'll tell you about, I'll bend your ear about John Murray Spear and the new motor, which was a very technological, mechanical approach to spirituality that occurred back in 18 something or other. But yeah, it's like, it's interesting too. It's like, you know, magical practices don't always have to be based on, you know, they can be very modern. They can be, you know, almost electronic. In fact, there's, you know, for a while there, I was, you know, doing the I Ching, but I was using an electronic version of it where I was using an app to basically kind of like, you know, do the same thing. But I think it's really fascinating that it's like, once again, this is a very individual thing, and the manifestation of these things can take all kinds of different forms. And especially these days, when you talk about, like, you know, the internet, the world of digital transmission and information and social media, it's like sometimes the effect can be very subtle but have, you know, really good results, you know, in that space. It's like, well, there's a whole bunch of things to explore there. I've always been fascinated by the idea of the internet existing as kind of a dream time. It's almost like a manifestation of, like, a parallel reality, or, you know, a different plane of existence. But one thing I do want, because we're going towards the end here, I do want to mention, though, one thing that I think is important, too. We mentioned being safe personally, but I also, one of the things I've always kind of liked about the old, you know, neo-pagan Wiccan approach is that magic is always a beneficial and never a negative. So, you know, if you're trying to harm someone, if you're trying to enact a negative result, it's going to come back and bite you in your butt. The whole idea is that, once again, if you throw out negative energy, it's going to come back at you twice as strong. So I think that's very important, both from a spiritual practice, but also just as an ethical and moral practice, because, you know, it should be a positive thing in your life and not trying to hurt or harm anybody else.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. Though there are times where a binding spell or a freezing spell to stop somebody in their tracks from doing something, I think is appropriate. But in that case, you're not trying to harm the person. You're trying to simply stop them from doing the thing that they're doing. And, you know, or you can use warding spells to protect your house and yourself. Do protective energy things. I mean, there's ways to deal with the negative stuff that might be coming at you without going into that negative space yourself. That said, I have ordered a book on curses just because I'm really curious and want to read it, but it hasn't arrived yet. I heard an interview with the author and I thought, oh, this is really interesting. Okay, well, I'd like to read her book. Not that I'm thinking of getting into that thing. For the most part, I really do believe that to be a decent human being, you're not going to go out and try to hurt people, you know, on purpose. And you should do the best you can to not hurt people inadvertently, like back to COVID-19, going outside without your mask, because you might be a carrier, mm-hmm. an asymptomatic carrier. That gets us away from the magic. But I also want to say, you talked about the electronic I Ching. I've also done tarot cards, you know, gone into different websites where they'll do like a little tarot card reading for you if you punch a button. And sometimes interesting things have come up. I've also used Inspirobot.me, which is an AI program, as a kind of a non-serious divination tool. And it can be often very hilarious and weirdly appropriate, the things that come out of this AI. So I think we can almost use anything, really. I mean, again, we're sort of now into general magic rather than sex magic, but some of the terms that I haven't mentioned yet, I've come across, of course, spectrosexuality. I've also come across theoeroticism and theosexuality. So that would be an eroticism or a sexuality around either a divine spirit or a divine spirit within a human being, which is, you know, kind of a lot of what Western Tantra does too. You know, I see the God in you, you see the God in me. Let's see. And we haven't really covered the witch's sabbat and sex with the devil. We haven't really gotten into Aleister mm-hmm. Crowley or Dion Fortune or, you know, the OTO. I mean, there's so much that we didn't get into, but we could have, and maybe we'll do it another time and have a, you know, a follow-up podcast or two on this. Let's see. What else do we need to throw into the mix before our time is up?
Well, I do think we definitely need to revisit it again, because there's so many fascinating times in history that mixed sex, spirituality, and magic together. You mentioned the OTO, you mentioned Crowley. I mean, you know, Anton LaVey's, you know, Church of Satan, is one of the sex magic. I mean, it's like all these different, like, different approaches to it, which I think is absolutely fascinating. Many of them practice, you know, kind of the same thing we already talked about, which was, you know, visualization and, you know, using sex as a ritual, as a component in a magic ceremony. But there's so many others. I mean, there's just like, it really is just like all kinds of different approaches to this. Though I do think it's interesting that the core has always been that, you know, using that power of eroticism and sexual stimulation. So there's that kind of core around all of them. But I still think it's a fascinating subject, and definitely I think one we should come back to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we can talk more, too, about the idea of how different magic communities are trying to, you know, navigate the terrain of consent and what they see as a, you know, as precious rituals that actually may not be appropriate, or that there's been so much coercion around them that maybe it's time to put them away. I mean, there's so much that can be talked about. And I know that was kind of a negative note to end on, but it's an important one. And coming back to this writer, Sister Georgia, in the thelemicunion.com website, she writes a statement which I want to kind of just drop here as an ending. She says, "Let me just make myself clear here. It's never appropriate. Sex as a condition for passing into some higher status state is the clearest example of harassment there is. Even in traditions where you're supposed to do your sexual initiation with your partner or by yourself, there is that little matter of supposed to. That's coercion. It's wrong. Always." And so I thought that was a pretty clear statement and a necessary one to be made, you know, on that aspect of the topic. So I guess one last thing to mention, we'll be back to Saturdays next week. We did it Sunday today because I had that whole conference thing yesterday. And so thank you, Chris, for accommodating me. And listeners, thank you for being here. I hope you are. Chris, last words. What do you want to leave us with?
Just that, have fun and don't harm yourself or other people. And, you know, enjoy the exploration. I mean, that's the biggest thing about anything about human sexuality. It's like, explore the, you know, as long as it's consensual, as long as it's safe emotionally and physically, enjoy yourself, including spiritually.
Absolutely. Okay. And with that, we will be back next week with an unnamed episode, I believe. We still have to figure out what we're going to do next week. So, yeah, have a great week. Have fun, as Chris says. And we'll see you next time on Love's Outer Limits. Bye-bye.